This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Podcast of Audio Reading Service volunteers reading the Journal Gazette is provided by the Allen County Public Library for the sight and print impaired and made available with the permission and cooperation of the Journal Gazette.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Marcia with
Mitchell.
For the next 2 hours, we'll be reading selections from the Wednesday, October the 1st, Fort Wayne Journal Gazette, copyright 2025. We'll begin with news for the first hour, and then we'll be taking a short break. When we come back from the break, we'll read obituaries and then a number of features from the living section. After that, we'll read from the perspectives section, including letters to the editor and the editorials. After editorials, we'll read the TV listings, sports, and birthday announcements. The headlines from the front page of Wednesday, October 1st, Journal Gazette are, Government Headed to Shutdown, Braun's Messages to Trump Sought, Trump City's Training Ground for Troop, Earthquake Kills 20 in Central Philippine Region. And now here's Mitchell with the very first article.
Government Headed to Shutdown, Last-Ditch Stopgap Bill Falls Short, Parties Blame Each Other. From the Associated Press, Dateline, Washington. Senate Democrats voted down a Republican bill to keep funding the government, putting it on near certain path to a shutdown for the first time in almost 7 years. The 55-45 vote Tuesday on the bill to extend federal funding for 7 weeks fell short of the 60 needed to end a filibuster and pass the legislation. It came as Democrats are making good on their threat to close the government if President Donald Trump and Republicans won't accede to their health care demands. Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer said Republicans are trying to bully Democrats by refusing to negotiate on an extension of health care benefits and other priorities. A government closure would mean that hundreds of thousands of federal workers could be furloughed or laid off. Trump threatened retribution on Democrats for a potential shutdown, saying Tuesday that it could include cutting vast numbers of people out, cutting vast things that they like, cutting programs that they like. Instead of negotiating, Democrats and Republicans angrily blamed each other Tuesday and refused to budge from their positions. It's only the president who can do this. We know he runs the show here, Schumer said Tuesday morning after a bipartisan White House meeting the day before yielded little progress. Republicans have until midnight tonight to get serious with us, Schumer said. Trump and his fellow Republicans said that they won't entertain any changes to this legislation, arguing that it's a stripped-down, clean bill that should be non-controversial. Senate Majority Leader John Thune, a Republican from South Dakota, said Republicans are not going to be held hostage by the Democrats' demands. The GOP-led House was on a week-long recess, unavailable for the immediate votes, even if the Senate did find bipartisan agreement. And far from entering into negotiations, Trump instead posted a fake mocking video of Democrats on Monday evening after the White House meeting. After Tuesday's votes, it was increasingly unlikely that either side would blink before the deadline. While partisan stalemates over government spending are a frequent occurrence in Washington, the current impasse comes as Democrats see a rare opportunity to use their leverage to achieve policy goals and as their base voters are spoiling for a fight with Trump. Republicans who hold a 53-47 majority in the Senate needed at least 8 votes from Democrats after Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky opposed the bill. Still, Schumer said Trump and Republicans would be to blame if the government shuts down. Thune said before the vote that he was hoping there are Democrats out there who are reasonable and understand what's at stake here. The last shutdown was in Trump's first term from December 2018 to January 2019 when he demanded that the Congress give him money for his U.S.-Mexico border wall. Trump retreated after 35 days, the longest shutdown ever, amid intensifying airport delays and missed paydays for federal workers. Millions of people could face higher premiums if the health care subsidies expire at the end of the year. Congress put them in place in 2021 during the COVID-19 pandemic to expand coverage for low and middle income people who purchase health care through the Affordable Care Act. Democrats have said they want the subsidies immediately extended. They have also demanded that Republicans reverse the Medicaid cuts that were enacted as a part of Trump's big, beautiful bill this summer for the White House, and to promise it will not move to rescind spending passed by Congress. We're not going to support a partisan Republican spending bill that continues to gut the health care of everyday Americans, House Democrat leader Hakeem Jeffries said. Thune pressed Democrats to vote for the funding bill and take up the debate on tax credits later. Some Republicans are open to extending the tax cuts, but many are strongly opposed to it. In rare back and forth with Schumer on Senate floor Tuesday morning, Thune said Republicans are happy to fix the ACA issue and have offered to negotiate with Democrats if they will vote to keep the government open until November 21st. The stakes are huge for federal workers across the country, as the White House told agencies last week that they should consider a reduction in force for many federal programs if the government shuts down. That means that workers who are not deemed essential could be fired instead of just furloughed. Either way, most would not get paid.
Braun's messages to Trump sought. Group wants to know if state was pressured into redistricting plan, by Devin Filchick of the Journal Gazette. Count USIN has filed a public records request seeking written correspondence between the White House and Governor Mike Braun's office regarding mid-decade redistricting, the Indiana nonprofit announced Tuesday. The request was filed under Indiana's Access to Public Records Act. It asks for all forms of written correspondence, including emails and text messages between Braun's office and the White House, a news release said. The request covers communications between August the 1st and September the 26th, and specifically asks for records that reference federally funded programs, initiatives, projects, or pending waivers that may have been tied to Indiana's compliance with a map redraw, the nonprofit said. The request seeks to ensure that Hoosiers have access to information about whether federal resources are being used as political leverage in decisions about Indiana's congressional boundaries, the news release said. President Donald Trump has called on state leaders to redraw U.S. House districts before the 2026 elections. Several states are moving toward doing so. An Indiana special session to consider redistricting could be called later this year. Count USIN is based in Fort Wayne. The public records request follows comments Braun reportedly made on a local radio show. If we try to drag our feet as a state on it, probably we'll have consequences of not working with the Trump administration as tightly as we should, Braun said during a show on WOWO of Fort Wayne, Indiana Capital Chronicle has reported. Braun later walked back his remarks, the news release said. In a state affairs interview, Braun seemed to portray lawmakers' reticence to embrace mid-decade redistricting as playing by the rules. I've been observing people that were hard-nosed simply because I think it's a Hoosier mentality. Just kind of stick with the rules. Don't do things out of the norm. Jalen Redzinski, Count U.S. Indiana founder, said Indiana residents deserve to know about the pressure being applied to state leaders. Full transparency is the foundation of accountability, and we hope the governor's office will be forthcoming about what Hoosier priorities may be held up or canceled if Indiana doesn't cave to Washington's whims, the Fort Wayne native said in a statement. State agencies are required by the Access to Public Records Act to acknowledge receipt of written request within 7 days. It does not require records to be produced in a specific time frame. However, the agency should produce the records in a reasonable time, according to the state's website. What is reasonable may depend on factors such as how many records you requested, whether the records are old and stored off-site, and whether the records must be redacted to take out confidential information.
earthquake kills 20 in Central Philippines region by the Associated Press, Dateline Manila, Philippines. An offshore earthquake of magnitude 6.9 collapsed walls of houses and buildings late Tuesday in a central Philippine province, killing at least 20 people, injuring many others, and sending residents scrambling out of homes into darkness as the intense shaking cut off power, officials said. The epicenter of the earthquake, which was set off by a local fault, was about 10 miles northeast of Bogo, a coastal city of about 90,000 people in the Cebu province, where at least 14 residents died, disaster mitigation officer Rex Yot said. The death toll in Bogo was expected to rise. Workers were trying to transport a backhoe to hasten search and rescue efforts in a cluster of shanties in a mountain village hit by a landslide and boulders, he said. It's hard to move in the area because there are hazards, Glenn Ursel, another disaster mitigation officer, said, adding some survivors were brought to the hospital. Six people, including three Coast Guard personnel, a firefighter, and a child, were killed separately in San Remigio town, south of Bogo, the town's vice mayor, Alfie Reynes, said to the DZMM radio network without elaborating how the victims died. Reynes appealed for food and water, saying San Remigio's water system was damaged by the earthquake. In Bogo, the quake damaged concrete walls of houses, a fire station, and concrete and asphalt roads, firefighter Ray Cañete said. We were in our barracks to retire for the day when the ground started to shake and we rushed out but stumbled to the ground because of the intense shaking, Cañete said, adding that he and three other firemen sustained cuts and bruises. A concrete wall in their fire station collapsed, Cañete said. He and fellow firefighters provided first aid to at least three residents who were injured by falling debris and collapsed walls. Hundreds of terrified residents gathered in the darkness in a grassy field near the fire station and refused to return home hours after the earthquake struck in Bogo. Several business establishments visibly sustained damages, and the asphalt and concrete roads where they passed had deep cracks, Cañete said, adding that an old Roman Catholic church in Don Bantayan town near Bogo was also damaged. Cebu Governor Pamela Barriquatro said the extent of the damage and injuries in Bogo and outlying towns in the northern section of the province would not be known until daytime. It could be worse than we think, he said in a video message posted on Facebook. The Philippine Institute of Volcanology and Seismology briefly issued a tsunami warning and advised people to stay away from the coastline in Cebu and in the nearby provinces of Leyte and Biliran due to possible waves of up to 3 feet. Teresito Bacol, director of the institute, said the tsunami warning was later lifted with no unusual waves being monitored. Cebu and other provinces were still recovering from a storm that battered the central region on Friday, leaving at least 27 people dead.
Trump cities training ground for troops. President Donald Trump on Tuesday proposed using American cities as training grounds for the armed forces and spoke of needing U.S. military might to combat what he called the invasion from within. Addressing an audience of military brass abruptly summoned to Virginia, Trump outlined a muscular and at times norm-shattering view of the military's role in domestic affairs. He was joined by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, who declared an end to woke culture and announced new directives for troops that include gender-neutral or male-level standards for physical fitness. The dual messages underscored the Trump administration's efforts not only to reshape contemporary Pentagon culture, but to enlist military resources for the president's priorities and for decidedly domestic purposes, including quelling unrest and violent crime. We should use some of these dangerous cities as training grounds for our military, Trump said. He noted at another point, we're under invasion from within. No different than a foreign enemy, but more difficult in many ways because they don't wear uniforms. after calling hundreds of military leaders and their top advisors from around the world to the Marine Corps base in Quantico, Hegseth largely focused on long-used talking points that painted a picture of a military hamstrung by woke policies. He said military leaders should do the honorable thing and resign if they don't like his new approach. Though meetings between military brass and civilian leaders are nothing new, this gathering had fueled intense speculation about its purpose given the haste with which it was called and the mystery surrounding it. The fact that admirals and generals from conflict zones were summoned for a lecture on race and gender in the military showed the extent to which the country's culture wars had become a front-and-center agenda item for Hegseth, its Pentagon, even at a time of broad national security concerns across the globe. Trump is accustomed to boisterous crowds of supporters who laugh at his jokes and applaud his boasting, but he wasn't getting that kind of soundtrack from the military leaders. In keeping with the nonpartisan tradition of the armed services, the military leaders sat mostly stone-faced through Trump's politicized remarks. Trump encouraged the audience at the onset of his speech to applaud as they wish. He then added, "And if you don't like what I'm saying, you can leave the room. Of course, there goes your rank and there goes your future." Some laughed. Before Trump took the stage, Hegseth said in his nearly hour-long speech that the military has promoted too many leaders for the wrong reasons, based on race, gender, quotas, and historic first. The era of politically correct, overly sensitive, don't hurt anyone's feelings leadership ends right now at every level, Hegseth said. That was echoed by Trump. The purposes of America's military is not to protect anyone's feelings. It is to protect our republic. We will not be politically correct when it comes to defending American freedom, Trump said. Several military officials and rank-and-file troops, who all spoke on condition of anonymity to avoid retaliation, said they were unsure how the remarks from Trump and Hegseth would actually affect their daily lives.
Officers seized guns from teen. A 16-year-old also had gear to make handguns automatic. This article is by Devin Filchak of the Journal Gazette. Police have seized several firearms and equipment to make handguns fully automatic from a 16-year-old, the Fort Wayne Police Department said Tuesday. The department used the recent incident as an example of how investigators are committed to stopping youth gun violence. "The Fort Wayne Police Department is very serious about ending youth violence in our community," the Facebook post said. "This includes getting guns out of the hands of our youth." The guns were seized after the department's Gang and Violent Crimes Unit learned a local teen illegally possessed firearms. The investigation led to search warrants. Police seized two handguns, an AR pistol, an AR upper, high-capacity magazines, 300 rounds of ammunition, and a 3D printer used to create switches to convert Glock handguns into fully automatic weapons, the post said. "It is not uncommon for us to seize firearms from teens, whether on traffic stops or during search warrants," said Sergeant Jonathan Cutler, the public information officer, in an email. "The cases are handled locally in juvenile court." Cutler said juveniles with several prior offenses of unlawfully possessing firearms might have their cases moved to adult court. Cutler said he wouldn't speculate on the nature of the case, including whether the teen was dealing illegal firearms, because the investigation is ongoing. Youth violence has been prevalent this year in Fort Wayne. At least 5 victims of homicide this year in Allen County have been age 20 or younger. Several other shootings have also involved teens. Mayor Sharon Tucker has introduced a 3-tiered plan to address youth violence, which includes hiring a part-time liaison who will help the police department form partnerships and awarding microgrants to organizations that will address youth violence. It also included the Mayor's Youth Engagement Council to host an event for discussion about youth violence for ages 14 to 18.
Local Habitat announces new CEO. McCowan brings 20 years of healthcare nonprofit experience, by Lisa Green of the Journal Gazette. An experienced healthcare executive will transition from the medical field into helping place people in homes when she joins Habitat for Humanity of Greater Fort Wayne. The nonprofit organization on Tuesday announced that Melissa McCowan will become its new CEO effective Monday. McCowan has more than 20 years of leadership experience in nonprofit operations, strategic planning, and community impact. She is poised to help Habitat serve more families across Greater Fort Wayne, a news release said. McCowan is joining the local Habitat for Humanity after an 18-year career with Parkview Health, where she most recently was Vice President of Employer Solutions. In that role, she focused on strategic growth and supporting the health and well-being of thousands of employees throughout the region, the news release said. Along with her roles in the workplace, McCowan has been an advocate for local nonprofit initiatives, including volunteering with Humane Fort Wayne and Community Harvest Food Bank. She co-founded Hope for Animals in 2008, which later merged with Allen County SPCA in 2021 to form Humane Fort Wayne. She has served on the boards of both organizations and was recognized as one of Greater Fort Wayne Business Weekly's 40 Under 40 in 2013. In mid-July, Habitat announced that Jeremy McLeish would step down as the local organization's CEO effective July 24th. He had been with the non-for-profit 8 years, including the last 2.5 as chief executive. Habitat built more than 100 homes, partnered with more than 150 families, and helped provide safe, affordable housing for about 375 children during McLeish's tenure, a July news release said. Josh Sater, Habitat's chief financial officer, was interim CEO. The Habitat Board of Directors, the news release said, believes McCowan's leadership is uniquely suited to guide the organization into its next stage of growth. Melissa's proven leadership in both healthcare and the nonprofit sector, combined with her deep-rooted faith, gives us complete confidence in her ability to bring Habitat GFW's strategic vision to life, said a statement from Carl Einhoff, Habitat's board chairman. What stands out most about Melissa is her genuine care for people, he said. Her heart for our community will help expand affordable homeownership opportunities and ensure families across Greater Fort Wayne have the support they need to help build stability and hope for the future. McCowan said she is excited to join Habitat for Humanity. My faith has always inspired me to serve others, and I look forward to working alongside the Habitat team, our future homeowners, and our community partners to continue transforming lives and neighborhoods through affordable home ownership. During the last build season, April 2024 to May of this year, the local Habitat built 20 homes, 18 in Allen County and 2 in Huntington County. During the current season that runs through May of 2026, 20 homes will have been added to Allen County, 4 in Huntington County, and 1 in Wells County, said Danielle Goodrich, marketing manager for Habitat. Not including in-kind donations and services, the average Habitat for Humanity home built is valued at $185,000. Goodrich said the organization ensures that each homeowner's mortgage is never more than 26% of their gross monthly income. In August, Habitat announced a new manager, Rick Johnson, would oversee Wells County. In October of last year, Jack Barlow joined the organization to focus on Huntington County builds. By hiring a dedicated manager who is part of the community, we can strengthen our partnerships, respond more effectively to community needs, and ensure future homeowners receive the focused support they deserve, Goodrich said.
NACS referendum faces opposition. School district should pursue reforms, not property tax hike, campaign argues. This is by Ashley Sloboda of the Journal-Gazette. Northwest Allen County Schools now faces a grassroots campaign against its upcoming operating referendum that, if approved, would allow the district to annually collect up to $12 million in additional property taxes for 8 years. Americans for Prosperity Indiana and a coalition of community members announced the volunteer-driven effort in a news release Tuesday. They asserted the November 4th ballot measure, which the district is seeking to support various staffing initiatives, would raise property taxes on families who are already struggling financially. The campaign wants every household to understand the referendum's long-term consequences and why sustainable reforms are needed that prioritize students and teachers without adding to the tax burden, the release said. Under the referendum, property tax bills would increase by $505 per year for median residences of the area. According to the ballot question, voters can use a calculator on the district's website to learn their estimated impact. District administrators have said that they plan to request $10 million in the referendum's first year if the ballot measure passes. Tyler Turnwald, the state chapter's grassroots engagement director, described the referendum as a band-aid for a broken system, not a solution. Instead of continually coming back to taxpayers, we should be looking at how to make government live within its means, prioritize spending, and ensure every dollar supports students and teachers, not bureaucracy, Turnwald said in a statement. The district declined to comment for this story, but Superintendent Wayne Barker has provided regular updates about the district's needs during school board meetings. He has repeatedly said that NACS, a growing district with more than 8,000 students, is underfunded when its per-pupil funding is compared with the state average and its Allen County neighbors. District resident Natalie Forbing acknowledged in a phone interview Tuesday that the district has done a good job providing information, but she doesn't think raising taxes is the answer. Forbing questioned how the district can be better stewards of its resources and work with what it has. The grassroots campaign is expected to involve phone calls, community outreach, and knocking on doors, the release said. The voter registration deadline is Monday.
Murder, robbery charges dismissed. Evidence against City Man in 2017 homicide no longer available, prosecutors say in filing, by Devin Filchak of the Journal Gazette. A judge has dismissed murder and robbery charges against a Fort Wayne man who was accused of crimes tied to a 2017 homicide. Tavon M. Underwood, 27, was arrested earlier this year on charges of murder, felony murder, and robbery. Carlos D. Ellis, 27, received matching charges, which were filed more than 7 years after 36-year-old Nicholas James Hennen was found in a wrecked vehicle. Hennen died of multiple gunshot wounds, and the Allen County Coroner's Office ruled his death a homicide. Underwood previously had a jury trial scheduled to start Tuesday. However, Deputy Prosecutor Tasha Lee filed a motion Friday to dismiss Underwood's charges. The dismissal was proposed because evidence that was previously available to the state is no longer available, and consequently the state can no longer prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt at trial at this time, according to court records. That motion was approved Friday by Allen County Superior Court Judge David Zent. The case was dismissed without prejudice, allowing prosecutors to refile those charges. Hennen left a party August 3, 2017, and told others there he was leaving to buy a gun, according to a probable cause affidavit written by Fort Wayne Detective Brian Martin. He did not return to the party. He was later found in a vehicle that crashed into a tree on Fairwick Lane off Fairfield Avenue. A woman who lived nearby said she saw the shooting. Her children were playing outside when Underwood reportedly told them to go inside, she told investigators. A car pulled up in front of her apartment, and the woman said she saw Underwood walking across a field carrying a handgun. Shortly after, the woman said she saw Underwood and Ellis firing their guns into the car, according to the affidavit. The two ran off after going through the victim's pockets, but the woman said Underwood called her to see if she would check the scene for the phone he dropped. Underwood reportedly told her, "I caught my first body," and that they were trying to rob the victim. Both suspects came by her home in the following days to warn her to not tell anyone about the crimes, the affidavit says. When asked to clarify details in November 2018, the woman said she ran outside when she heard the gunshots and she saw the vehicle moving forward, eventually hitting a tree across the street. Earlier this year, Fort Wayne Detective Luke McDonald analyzed phone records from the investigation and determined they connected Ellis to the shooting. Phones used by Ellis and Hennen showed 21 communications between 4:33 and 6:34 p.m. Hennen sent his last text to the phone Ellis was using at 6:24 p.m. It said, "I'm out here where you are." The shooting and the crash were reported about 15 minutes later. On Friday, Zent ordered the case to be expunged from Underwood's records. Underwood remains in the Allen County Jail on probation violations and a hold for a DeKalb County criminal case, according to online court records. Ellis's charges remain intact. He has a four-day jury trial scheduled to begin February 24th before Allen Superior Court Judge Fran Gull. If convicted of all charges, he would face up to 71 years in prison.
Okay, and now for some news briefs around Fort Wayne and Allen County. Company to host Pack the Box, Fort Wayne Metals will host another Pack the Box this week to support the Breasty Boxes initiative. On Thursday, 100 employees of Fort Wayne Metals will pack more than 100 of those boxes to help local women battle breast cancer, the company said. Each box contains items like socks, blankets, natural personal care products, jewelry, and handcrafted art, all selected personally by the Breasty Boxes team. Recipients of the boxes will also find notes of encouragement. Fort Wayne Metals has said through an email, Breasty Boxes is a local nonprofit founded by cancer survivor Erica Hyatt, who began building boxes in October of 2022 and has gifted 2,909 boxes and raised $538,992 for its cause, the news release said. Fort Wayne Metals is a corporate sponsor, and the company said it's the first to host a Pack the Box on site. Breasty Boxes distributes about 80 boxes to breast cancer patients per month. Indiana 37 to close for seal coating. The Indiana Department of Transportation on Tuesday said maintenance crews will close Indiana 37 today for seal coat operations. Work on the seal coating between Indiana 101 and Ohio State Line is expected to take place from 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Drivers will need to seek an alternate route during this time, a news release said. The work is weather dependent and schedules are subject to change. During seal coat operations, existing pavement is coated with liquid asphalt, which seals cracks and provides waterproof protection. The process extends the service life of the roadway and lowers maintenance costs. After a curing period, crews will return to fog seal the new driving surface and apply pavement markings. State transportation officials also remind drivers to slow down, avoid distractions, and consider worker safety when traveling through active work zones. Closure of Lima Road extended. A Lima Road closure will be extended until 5 p.m. October 15th, the Allen County Highway Department said Tuesday. Lima Road between Indiana 3 and Woods Road have been closed since early August for a storm sewer installation. And finally, Maumee Avenue to have one lane. Fort Wayne City Utilities announced Maumee Avenue will be reduced to one lane starting at 8 a.m. today. Crews will work to repair damage from a water main break, a news release said. Maumee will be closed between Lombard and Roy Streets. Repairs are expected to be completed in one day.
And now I want to share a large, colorful photograph that's in this morning's Journal Gazette picture that shows workers outside. It's in the Parkview Field Stadium with rows and rows of bleacher seats and the high-rise private boxes as well. And there's probably about six or eight workers out there actively working in the sunshine. And the tagline says, "It's not too early to prepare for the holiday lights at Parkview Field." The tagline to this photo reads, "On an unseasonably warm Tuesday afternoon, tin cap ushers from left, Diana Ware, Noah Houck, and Vicky Rice, strands of lights in the stands of Parkview Field in preparation for holiday lights. In its second year, the walkthrough event will feature new displays with 1.5 million lights, 50% more than last year. Visitors can also ride a train and write a letter to Santa. Holiday lights will open November the 13th and run 44 nights through January the 3rd. Tickets are $10 in November and January and $12 in December and are available now at www.tincaps.com/lights at the Parkview Field ticket office. Discounts are also available for groups of 20 or more. And now we'll continue with our next news article that's entitled, Ohio County Settles Lawsuit Over Jail Death to Pay $7 million After Restrained Inmate Died. The family of a man who died after being restrained in an Ohio County jail said Tuesday that they have reached a $7 million settlement agreement with the county and are pushing officials there to prevent something like this death from ever happening again. A lawyer for the family of Christian Black, who died March the 26th, said Montgomery County has taken responsibility and officials there have indicated that they will take steps such as adding inpatient beds in the jail for people in need of mental health care. But their lawyer, Michael Wright, also told reporters at a news conference that he and Black's family want to see more, such as jail officers charged and convicted in their son's death. Christian Black's mother, Misty Black, said the settlement in the family's lawsuit against Montgomery County does not end her pursuit of justice for her son. "This check does not stop the criminal side," Misty Black told reporters. "It's not going to make me go away. I am here. Justice for Christian Black. I won't stop until justice is served." Christian Black, 25, was in the jail after he crashed a stolen car, police have said. Their video from inside the jail released by Black's family and attorneys showed Black inside a cell, yelling and repeatedly banging his fist and his head against a glass door. 9 deputies gathered outside that cell, with some rushing in. They pinned Black to the floor. They put handcuffs on him before wrestling him into a restraint chair, the video showed. Black's head flopped and slumped while he was in the restraint chair. The video showed that jail staff checked Black's eyes, took his blood pressure, and rubbed his chest while he was unresponsive in the chair. About 9 minutes passed between the time he was put in the chair and when the jail staff started to perform CPR, the family's attorneys have said. Black died 2 days after he was taken to a hospital. The county coroner's office has said that Black likely died from positional asphyxiation, which happens when the chest cannot expand, starving the body of oxygen. His death was ruled a homicide by the coroner. In a statement, Montgomery County's administrator Michael Colbert and the sheriff's office expressed sympathy for Black's family. "We recognize that no amount of money can ever replace him," Colbert said. "The county's Board of Commissioners is undertaking a broad commitment to behavioral health needs, including creating a new nearly $20 million behavioral health unit inside the jail that is expanding the number of medical beds from 12 to 112, Colbert said. No jail personnel have been criminally charged, and the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office declined comment on the settlement, saying an investigation was ongoing.
Credit agency frowns on the state tax reform, says law creates uncertainty for municipal bonds. This article is by Whitney Downard of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. Experts warn that Indiana's cities, towns, and counties could take a hit to their credit rating through no fault of their own, but rather due to continued fallout from the state's effort to curb property tax growth. S&P Global Ratings, which provides independent credit ratings and research, warned that the new law enacted earlier this year creates uncertainty for local income tax-backed debt, according to a recent story in industry publication The Bond Buyer. "At this point, we believe it's too soon to assess how these changes will influence our ratings," S&P Associate Director John Souter said, told The Bond Buyer. But a report co-authored by Souter flags concerns with new provisions of the wide-ranging bill, which limited local tax growth and has left some municipalities scrambling to continue providing government services. Representative Ed Delaney, an Indianapolis Democrat, said the news confirmed his concern that Senate-enrolled Act 1 was not well thought out. "There's a good reason for local government to be concerned about their fiscal situation and for our citizens to be concerned about both local services and a threatened increase to local income taxes," Delaney told the Indiana Capital Chronicle. "As often happens, the supermajority was so focused on sending a message about property taxes that it pretty much forgot about every other consideration, including the question of what the total implication is for our voters. It seems that total taxes will increase for many. He said that revisiting property tax law would be a useful topic for a special session, unlike eliminating Democratic representation in our congressional delegation. Republicans are currently weighing a November special session to redraw boundary lines for congressional districts as President Donald Trump's behest. Senate Bill 1 went through several versions before landing on a compromise that would save homeowners a collective $1.2 billion in property taxes over three calendar years. Money that would come out of the pockets of local units of government, including libraries and schools. And while S&P previously worried about smaller tax bases and falling revenues, both of which would impact a locality's final rating, experts flagged concerns about another provision. In an effort to grant counties and cities a reprieve, state lawmakers opted to revisit local income taxes. Previously, such levies were an option only available to counties and capped at 3.75%. The new law lowers the cap to 2.9%, but allows municipalities to impose their own rate up to 1.2% within that tax. However, those taxes must be recertified annually, which S&P says creates uncertainty for debt tied to those taxes. Much like how people use their credit rating to borrow against their future income, local units of government rely on these bonds to finance capital projects and operations. Due to the changes under the law, these municipalities could see their ratings take a hit. But the top credit rating for the agency said it wouldn't take any action until 2028, when those requirements start. That gives state lawmakers some time to act. At a tax panel earlier this month, top Republicans confirmed that a follow-up bill to the law would be their first fiscal policy going into the next session. Chairman Thompson and I have had a number of conversations, even before session was over earlier this year, about changes we would need to make, said Senator Travis Holdman, Republican of Markle. Moving out some effective dates for implementing changes, for example, would give us time to start to process some of the new changes, said Holdman, who authored the first version of the bill. He said the results have been all over the board. We've had some financial advisors who lit the hair on fire of some local mayors and county commissioners and city council members, with some bad information, to be honest with you. And so we're just trying to get a handle on that, Holdman continued. Thompson, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, also acknowledged modifications to Senate Enrolled Act 1 are a priority for 2026.
In news briefs, Pfizer and Trump agree on deal to lower Medicaid drug prices. Drug maker Pfizer has agreed to lower drug costs under a deal with President Donald Trump's administration. Trump made the announcement Tuesday with Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla at the White House. Under the agreement, New York-based Pfizer will charge most favored nation pricing to Medicaid and guarantee the same pricing on newly launched drugs. That involves matching the lowest price offered in other developed nations. The agreement by Pfizer builds on an executive order Trump signed in May, setting a deadline for drug makers to electively lower prices or to face new government pay limits. Spotify founder steps down as CEO. Spotify has announced that founder Daniel Ek is stepping down as CEO to become the executive chairman. The Stockholm-based company says Chief Product and Technology Officer Gustav Sundersson and Chief Business Officer Alex Nordstrom will become co-CEO. Ek states the change aligns titles with how the company has been operating since 2023. Spotify has more than 700 million subscribers and a vast library of content. The announcement caused Spotify shares to fall more than 5%. And lastly, in a brief, DoorDash adds reservations and robots. DoorDash is adding restaurant reservations and robot deliveries to its menu in some U.S. markets. The San Francisco-based company will soon begin offering restaurant reservations in its app in New York and Miami. Other cities will follow. It also plans to begin offering deliveries in the Phoenix area with its own autonomous robot called Dot, which can travel up to 20 miles an hour.
Nobel laureate who studied the universe's origins dies. From the Associated Press, Dateline, Berkeley, California. Nobel laureate Dr. George Smoot, who conducted groundbreaking research into the origins of the universe during a long career at the University of California, Berkeley, and the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, has died. The school said he was 80. Smoot died September 18th in Paris of a heart attack, according to a statement Monday by UC Berkeley. Along with John Mather of NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, Smoot won the 2006 Nobel Prize for Physics for finding the background radiation that finally pinned down the Big Bang Theory, the idea that the universe was born in a rapid cosmic expansion some 14 billion years ago. The Florida native earned a PhD in particle physics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in 1970. He soon joined the Berkeley Lab, where he spent a distinguished career uncovering the secrets of the universe, Lab Director Mike Witherell wrote in a tribute. At the lab, Smoot led a research team that produced detailed maps of the infant universe. They revealed a pattern of minuscule temperature variation in the cosmic microwave background relic light from billions of years ago. Those early tiny fluctuations evolved into the galaxies we observe today, Witherell wrote. It was that research that led to Smoot and Mather winning the Nobel Prize. He used $500,000 of his Nobel money to launch the Berkeley Center for Cosmological Physics at UC Berkeley. He traveled the world after retiring from the Berkeley Lab in 2014 and took a keen interest in climate change. Smoot appeared as himself twice on the hit sitcom The Big Bang Theory, including in an episode where he lectured at a fictional physics symposium. In 2009, he won the top prize on the game show Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Consumer confidence sags as jobs grow scarce. U.S. consumer confidence declined again in September as Americans' pessimism over inflation and the weakening job market continued to grow. The Conference Board said Tuesday its consumer confidence index fell by 3.6 points to 94.2 in September, down from August 97.8. That's a bigger drop than analysts were expecting and the lowest reading since April when President Donald Trump rolled out a sweeping tariff policy. A measure of Americans' short-term expectations for their income business conditions and the job market fell to 73.4, remaining well below 80, the marker that can signal a recession ahead. Consumers' assessments of their current economic situation dropped by 7 points to 125.4. Write-in responses to the survey showed that references to price and inflation rose this month, regaining its top position as consumers' main concern about the economy. Mentions of tariffs declined this month but remain elevated, the Conference Board said. Government data released earlier this month showed that inflation rose in August as the price of gas, groceries, and airfares jumped. Consumer prices increased 2.9% last month from a year earlier, and the Labor Department said up from 2.7% the previous month and the biggest jump since January. Excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core prices rose 3.1%, the same as in July. While unemployment and layoffs remain historically low, there has been noticeable deterioration in the labor market this year and mounting evidence that people are having difficulty finding jobs. Earlier this month, the government reported that U.S. non-farm employees added a paltry 22,000 jobs in August following July's disappointing 79,000 job gains. There is a sidebar to this article that says remodeling prices outpace inflation. The cost of home repair and remodeling is rising faster than inflation, according to a new report. Data analytics company Versix Repair and Remodeling Index shows a 3.4% increase in the April-June quarter compared to last year, outpacing a 2.7% rise in inflation. The index tracks over 100,000 home improvement products. Labor costs, especially for labor-intensive projects like tile flooring and bathroom remodeling, are driving this increase. Nearly all categories saw cost hikes. Homeowner spending on maintenance rose in the first half of this year, but is expected to slow in 2026 amid slower new home construction.
Deporting people over Gaza views ruled illegal from the Associated Press. Dateline Boston, the Trump administration violated the Constitution when it targeted non-U.S. citizens for deportation solely for supporting Palestinians and criticizing Israel, a federal judge said Tuesday in a scathing ruling directly and sharply criticizing President Donald Trump and his policies as serious threats to free speech. U.S. District Judge William Young in Boston agreed with several university associations that the policy they described as ideological deportation violates the First Amendment as well as the Administrative Procedure Act, a law governing how federal agencies develop and issue regulations. Young also found the policy was arbitrary or capricious because it reverses prior policy without reasoned explanation. This case, perhaps the most important ever to fall within the jurisdiction of this district court, squarely presents the issue whether non-citizens lawfully present here in the United States actually have the same free speech rights as the rest of us, the court answers. The court answers this constitutional question unequivocally, yes, they do. Young, a nominee of Republican President Ronald Reagan, wrote, "The Department of Homeland Security did not immediately respond to a request for comment."
And that concludes the new reading of the news from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette for Wednesday, October the 1st. We will now take a short break, and when we return, we'll be reading obituaries and features from the living section.